Welcome to episode 10 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, our hosts, along with two very special guests, talk about the ways in which accessibility and SEO intersect and what our rapidly evolving online world has in store for us in the next few years. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/010. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody. It's Amber. I'm here today with Steve.
Hello. Welcome, everybody.
And Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
And we're super excited because we have two special guests today. Do you all want to introduce yourself?
Oh, maybe it's fun that I introduce you, Joost, and that you introduce me. That would be great.
I'm good with that. Let's do
it. Okay, so we're here together, Joost and Marieke. And Joost is the founder of Joost SEO. I think everybody knows the Joost SEO plugin. We have almost 30 million users now. And Joost has passed on and is doing different things now because he's no longer the head of Joost. And he works for Newful Digital and does a lot of investing with his lovely wife. This is your cue.
So we're joined by my lovely wife, Marieke, who is the founder of Joost Academy, which is which might actually be important, and did a lot of different things throughout the creation of Joost, the company, including something that we'll probably end up talking about today, our readability analysis, which she came up with, which was later taken over by the entire SEO industry. She has a PhD in sociology/criminology, which is very useful when you're talking about accessibility. Did you know a lot about criminals? but the math in it is actually quite useful sometimes. So it all works out. We have together we have four wonderful children, and that's about all you need to know, I guess.
Yeah. And you all are here today because you invested in our company, Equalize Digital.
Yay! And
we're very excited. So we were like, we should have you on and have a guest episode, which we've never done before.
Yeah.
Oh. And we're going to be talking about accessibility and SEO. But first, I can take blame for the beverage. I said... I wanted us to try and find something that was Dutch, but also we're recording this at 8:30 a.m. my time, and I don't really know if I want to drink a beer. So I did a bunch of research, and I found Stroopwafel liqueur. I don't know.
You're
might have
doing
a blurb
that very
there,
well,
Chris.
And it's Dutch.
I said it right this time.
No, it's Dutch, but we never tried it before. So that's
So tell us what a stroopwafel is.
Stroopwafel is kind of a cookie with caramel inside. And I think you're supposed to put it on your cup if you drink coffee or tea. And then the caramel kind of melts. And that makes it really good. So, but I usually, well, if you want to have fresh stroopwafels, you go to the local market and then they sell it. They were even selling it at the garden shop in our hometown. Dutch.
So, okay. I also ordered a stroopwafel cookie.
Ah!
The Delmans brand that Joost, you told us about. Yeah. And I did... It's a good thing Chris gave me two because I tried to put one on top of my cup and it sat there for a few minutes.
And then...
And now it is in my teeth. So I might have to fish it out here in a minute. And luckily I can taste the one that is not soup.
Yeah. So I think it's...
Oh, my goodness.
So I think it's a little funny. So in lieu of drinking beer in the morning, we're going to do some vodka. Is that what this
is? Yeah, you wait, I don't have the bottle. Steve, what does this actually have in it? What does it say?
I mean, I haven't read the ingredients, but it says vodka with natural and artificial flavors and caramel color.
So it's just vodka.
Yeah, so it's just so like, vodka. Okay,
so we can all smell it.
Vodka with some food coloring and sugar, probably.
Yeah, I mean, what I'll say is when I was pouring this out of the bottle, when I first opened the bottle, my nose was probably a good 2 feet away from the lip of the bottle, and I immediately smelled caramel. Yeah. And that kind of impressed me, but I don't...
Yeah, It smells like strawberry waffle.
Yeah, it smells like the cookie, yeah.
I'm going to taste it.
Yeah, shall we taste?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm going to taste it too.
Mm. So is that straight? Are you guys tasting it straight?
I'm tasting a little bit off of a shot glass, and I'm going to pour some of this into my coffee next and have it in my coffee.
Yeah, wow. So I tasted
it's actually not bad.
It's yeah. Okay, so this is clearly not straight vodka because it's sweet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, very sweet.
It doesn't feel like you have to cough after you drink it.
No. You know, I think somebody put a stroopwafel on the vodka. And then it melted, just like in your tea. And that's this. Uh-huh. That's what they ended up with.
So yeah. It tastes like a good stroopwafel to you?
With vodka.
Yeah. I will say I was a little worried when we bought this that it was going to be like mostly rocket fuel with a little bit of stroopwafel flavor. But it turned out to be the alcohol is not hitting me too hard.
No.
It's sippable. Mm-hmm. Like I can
it's
see
only
having
it's
it.
Only 14.7%. I mean, it's not like very alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like barely like it's like wine almost.
All right, I have to try my cookie now because I want to compare it to the taste of the cookie.
And also, stroopwafels are actually the best export product the Netherlands has ever made.
You're not pronouncing it wrong. You're saying stroopwafels.
Yeah, I know.
We're not going to go use
stroopwafel.
The American way. Yeah.
It's like me introducing myself. I'm high, I'm juiced. Yeah. But yeah.
It's like really caramely and chewy in the middle. Yeah. I thought it was going to be harder.
Oh, the cookie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and if they're fresh,
I wish I had taken
better.
My one off.
Yeah, fresh strobe waffles are absolutely the best.
Yeah,
and you guys used to give these away at shows, right? For Yoast as swag.
Yeah, it wasn't the best.
Yeah, it's super hard.
It's really hard to get food to different countries. They have all kinds of rules and regulations. So we ended up with piles and piles of strobe waffles that we couldn't get to events because we weren't allowed. So. Wasn't the best thing.
Sounds like a good problem to have.
And then we gave it away.
Until you have thousands of them, Chris, and not a couple dozen.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds a little bit like us at the end of Girl Scout cookie season when we failed to sell them all.
Yeah.
And we have all these cookies, and then somehow everyone just keeps eating them. And I'm thinking, I don't know if you should be eating a box of Girl Scout cookies every single day.
No.
So, all right. So before we move on, the last question is, I always like to ask, would you drink it again?
I would. I'm going to take the bottle home.
I mixed mine in.
We're gonna finish this. Yeah, now I'm quite sure.
Yeah. I mixed mine in some chai tea, and like it just tastes like caramel. I don't really even taste the alcohol that much, you know. And
Yeah, I got to pour mine in my... Although my tea probably tastes like a strawberry.
Anyway.
Because the cookie fell into it. But, yeah, the other thought I had about it was it might be good for, like, if you were making, like, a syrup or something, either for a dessert or to, like, pour on actual waffles or pancakes or something.
I would 100% pour this on top of a nice vanilla gelato or a vanilla ice cream.
Right. I was thinking that as well. I'm going to really do that tonight.
I agree.
All right, so it is unanimous. Everyone should go buy stroopwafel liqueur and try it. It is good. So, all right, so we're going to talk about accessibility. And I had already sort of started to write show notes before we decided to ask you guys to come on. And I had planned to call this episode, Accessibility is More Important Than SEO, which is extra fun considering SEO is your game. Yeah. So I'm curious what your thoughts are about that title and if I should not use that title.
No, I think you should use the title. I think you're right in terms of what's more important in life. The website should be accessible for everybody. That's just something that's good for the people. I don't know whether I would agree if we think about a business sense, but in the end, I hope accessibility will be more important than say than SEO. What do you think, Joost?
I think to an extreme, I love the title, and at the same time, it's not like they're opposite ends of a spectrum. They're really not. I mean, 99 times out of 100, improving a site's accessibility will also improve its SEO. Mm-hmm. And the very few cases where you might have to choose between SEO and accessibility, choosing accessibility is never really going to hurt your SEO. So I would say that they're not opposites, and that you can really strive for both and should strive for both. Which is also why investing in y'all made perfect sense. because it's a natural extension and next evolution of what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... For our listeners who might not be aware of the overlap, I think it'd be worth us talking a little bit about some of the ways that it overlaps. And maybe, Steve, you could jump in here to start us off with some of the technical ways.
Sure.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Right. So the intersection of SEO and accessibility. I mean, some of these things are pretty simple, right? So page titles, headings. Having appropriate headings, pages that can be scanned easily. Anchor text, right? Anchor text is something that touches both SEO and accessibility. Readability, we talked a little bit about readability. The Yoast plugin does a readability scan, and so does the accessibility checker. So those are kind of, we're really crossing sections there. Descriptive links. Transcripts, right? I mean, transcripts could be highly beneficial for SEO, right? I mean, you're adding a lot of text content to the page that, you know, isn't there without a transcript, right? So you have a video that you put on a website. If there's no transcript, right, there's not a lot of SEO juice on that page, right? So if you add a large transcript, there's lots of keywords in there and just a lot more for the search engine to crawl and to index. So that's off the cuff, that's a little bit of the cross section, right? Anything to add to that?
No, I think you're entirely right. I think Google is just like someone who can't see. That's just how you should look at Google. So if you're building a website for people that have problems with visuals, then you'll be doing good things for SEO as well. Because Google is, Google's a little bit stupid. So you have to help them. And I don't want to say that blind people are stupid at all, but Google is a little bit blind and needs help in the same way to explain things to people that can't see.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, Google is probably the most frequent blind crawler or user visitor of any website out there.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe I guess the other search engines too.
Right. And when you start to consider bounce rate too, right? Like if your website's not usable for like somebody on a screen reader, they're probably going to bounce real quick. And if you've ever seen somebody that uses a screen reader exclusively, they navigate websites about 1,000 times faster than we do. Okay. And they're bounced really real quick. And same with the algorithm, right? If the algorithm can't understand the page, it'll bounce, right?
Readability, I would say that's important for every user because, it's hard to read a text from a screen. Even if you are a good reader, If your text is better structured and your sentences aren't too long, it's just easier to grasp the meaning of a text. I would always say if you want to write a good text, read it out loud to someone. So that's just, if you write a good text for a screen reader, then you're writing a good text for everybody. So that's what I do. If I write a text, I'll read it out loud and see if I understand my own writing.
Yeah. And well, that
you see how awesome it is to share an office with her.
I talk to myself a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a reason why I'm currently sitting in my living room instead of in my office, which is just a little bit around the corner from Christmas.
My voice tends to carry a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially on sales calls.
Well, just to echo what some other people have said, and I was actually having a conversation with a guy who runs a pretty prominent website in the student loan refinancing space, and they get around, I want to say, 250,000 visitors a month. And he was saying, I'm sorry, I just don't see how accessibility is going to help me meaningfully. And so we got into a conversation during the proposal and the presentation, where I basically had the privilege of respectfully disagreeing with him. And we were just talking about, well, let's think about the proportion of your potential user base, right? Because we know that up to 20% of individuals have some sort of disability. Now, the caveat there is there are people with disabilities that doesn't really impact how they browse or use the web, right? But let's say even conservatively, maybe it's 5% or maybe it's 10%. That's a 5 to 10% gain on the on-page or the visitor metrics through SEO with more people being engaged. And that's actually a huge jump when you're talking about the scale that that guy was at. So I was saying, you know, imagine you have 25,000 more people engaging with your service a month because your website's accessible that you would otherwise be excluding. What would that mean for you? What kind of results would that create? Right. And I think that, you know, Marika, you were saying, there's a clear business case for SEO. And with the way that SEO dovetails with accessibility, I think that's the beauty of that combination, right, is that by extension, there can be a business case for accessibility that can be pretty substantial, especially at scale.
Yeah, and SEO is like,
I think actually,
you can talk as well.
No, I think actually that's the reason why it will become even more important over time. As you've seen Google focus on page speed the last few years a lot and adding that as a ranking factor because they want to give the best user experience to their users. Now, the same portion of people that has these disabilities is a user of Google because everyone uses Google. So it makes no sense for Google to send people to a website that they know is inaccessible. They've actually, if you look at how this worked and how they've done this over the years, they've slowly ramped up their whole site speed story. Mm-hmm. And I think we're coming to the culmination of that more and more, where they're adding a few Core Web Vitals metrics, or they're changing Core Web Vitals metrics because they can change stuff better. I think they'll start doing the same with accessibility. It's already in their Lighthouse tests. It's already in a lot of things that they make you look at when you test your site. It makes total sense for them to actually start looking at it more and using it for more things, because it is in the interest of their users to do so. So I think that in the end is a matter of time. If it's not already something that the algorithm, which most Googlers don't even know what it does anymore because it's in part machine learned, might already take into account. Because why would you send a user to, when you have the choice between 100 websites that rank for a specific term, and you know that one of those websites is not accessible, why would you even rank it?
Yeah. This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen,
Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant, real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
Well, and I think circling back to, you know, is accessibility more important than SEO? I think there are definitely cases where a website might have good content. It might have like the meta tags or things like that in place that allows it to rank well. But bringing people to your website does not equal a conversion. And if people can't actually, like, sure, they can read your blog posts and your blog posts are ranking well. But if they can't click the add to cart and checkout, follow the checkout process, or they can't submit a form because your fields aren't labeled, then what does bringing all that traffic to your website even do for your business? Right. Nothing.
Yeah. And I think to touch a little bit on what Yost was saying was one thing one thing to watch out for is definitely, like you said, in Lighthouse, they're measuring accessibility. And I think when you start to see Google measuring something, it's probably a matter of time before they start weighing it, right?
Yeah, they give really clear, they tell us that this is important. So they give clear hints that this is the way SEO will go.
Yeah, so the mechanism...
Yeah, and they also say that they can't really measure it well yet. I've dropped a link that we can use in the show, that we can send people to in the show notes on an interview with John Mueller from Google, where people ask him this question, and he immediately says accessibility is super important, but we can't really measure that yet, and it's like it's super important to look at what is he really saying here, and. I think that it's a hint of things to come, but it's also like they might not even need to, because it's such an indication of website quality overall.
Mm. Well, you know, I've had thoughts about the WebAIM Million, which, for people who aren't familiar, WebAIM is a organization that focuses on accessibility, and every year they scan the top 1 million websites for some accessibility problems, and they publish a report on what's out there and how many of them have obvious accessibility problems. And can they find everything? No. Automated tools can't find everything, but they can find a lot. Yeah. And, you know, he says, we don't know how to measure that yet. Yet is pretty, like, that's a very key word, right? And I think it's only a matter of time before they do start doing it, because there are examples like the WebAIM Million where they're bulk scanning huge numbers of sites and being able to identify key indicators of whether it has accessibility problems or not.
I think they can already see that, because they have a lot of data like that and they actually share it. So in the Chrome UX report, they already share a lot of that data, and they do run some of those
tests.
It's
just not a ranking factor yet.
No, they haven't announced it as a ranking factor yet, which is also a distinction that is very, and I think that once they do actually incorporate it, if they make that conscious decision to incorporate it as a ranking factor, they'll probably announce it too, because let's be honest, it would make them look good. But they might not even need to, because it really, in so many ways, it already overlaps with so many things that good SEO already does. It's all the things Steve mentioned earlier, like the all the different things that incorporate both good SEO and good accessibility. I would add one more that he didn't mention that I was thinking as he was saying it, and that's like using all the HTML elements for what they're supposed to be used for.
Semantics.
I was super happy the other day. We've introduced a new HTML element, search, which is specifically for search input fields. And I love it. I mean, it's super simple. It's the simple stuff that makes life easier to build a website. And we used to do that as input type equals search, which is fine as well. But this is actually a bit more indicative of something. All these things together matter, and they are about making better websites.
Yeah.
And good websites are accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we just recorded an episode where we were talking about tables, because I audited a website and it had a table that was built with divs. and that's another perfect example. You know, people try to get into like that zero spot, right? I don't know if they still call it the zero spot in Google, but where it's showing like a snippet, or I've seen instances where Google pulls tables from websites to answer someone's question in the people always ask box. Yeah. But if you don't have your content tagged in that way, then it's probably not going to pull that.
No, to do that, it needs to actually be tabular data in a table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Google really, really looks for specific things like that. It's also very hard to get featured snippets from something else than just a paragraph of text. So it'll not grab that from a caption or a...
span or a div. It needs to actually be in a P tag?
Most of the time it is. So there's loads of overlap between like what is important for one is important for the other. And I think that that's healthy.
Yeah. The entire mission of Google is to make the world's information usable and findable for everybody. So that's...
I think it's universally accessible and useful.
Accessible. that's their mission. So then this is important. And for everyone who think SEO is important, you want to rank outside the audience you're currently having. So that could be that you need to open up your website in a way to attract a broader audience.
Yeah. Are we in the land of making predictions? Does anybody have any thoughts about when Google might actually say this is a ranking factor? Or what might precede that?
Yoast always thinks that things happen way sooner than I would anticipate them.
I'm a techno optimist.
I'm just a normal person.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, it is interesting to also think about, which we haven't talked much about, you know, none of us are lawyers, but there's a lot of laws out there as well that require website accessibility. And perhaps, you know, like I know in Europe, there's a lot that's going to come into play in 2025 requiring accessibility. I don't know if any of that impacts Google, if Google's like, well, all these laws are starting to happen, so maybe we can also jump on this bandwagon.
Well, it'll impact them a bit in that they will actually probably help people with doing that a bit, because it makes sense for them to then recommend the right things. I must be honest, though, in most European countries, so we've had guidelines like this in the Netherlands for quite a while already, and nobody abides by them, which is super annoying.
You even had a website on that.
Yeah, which was on Dutch... Literally more than 10 years ago already, yeah.
But the laws don't have teeth, right? So what's the difference?
No.
GDPR comes with very big fines.
Yeah. The funny thing is, in Germany now, these laws come with fines, and everyone can sue for them. And that is actually changing how people are behaving around it. I'm not the biggest fan of a sue everyone kind of culture because it mostly creates more jobs for lawyers and not for anyone else. Yeah.
Essentially what that is the government is outsourcing the enforcement of the law to private citizens. At the end of the day, that's what that is.
Yeah, I think that's not necessarily the best way to go at it, but I do think that that it'll have an impact, and I mean, even if it's just because it raises awareness more about, hey, this is actually something that you need to think about when you build a website, and I think that one of the things that I would love at some point to happen is for people to have a checklist when they deliver a website. Mm-hmm. This should just be our marketing collateral, maybe.
Also just install accessibility.
There you go.
Before you bring that website to your client, or before you say, hey, I'm done with this website, make sure that that people can actually get to it, and that it's accessible and indexable, and that search engines can get to it, and that that you've built it properly. I hope that at some point we'll get to the point where web developers will consider that standard good practice.
Well, so we actually have one of those, which we do give out to people. If you're a listener, reach out to me. We probably need to figure out a better way to put it on our website. But the thing that's interesting about that checklist is that it is, we have it broken up by phase, and we have accessibility items under discovery, under content, under design. Like, it's not just on the web developer. I mean, the broader conversation of web developer, like the person who builds the ultimate thing and guides the project, right? But there is a lot of stuff that can really help when you're asking your client to create content in a Google Doc or wherever it is that you get the content from the client. That then if you just want to be able to quickly copy and paste it in, they need to pay attention to some things. It's like across the whole phase of building a website.
Yeah, and I can see that in content discovery, there's probably a lot of overlap there as well between accessibility and SEO. Like, what do we need to write about and why?
Yeah.
And which are the kinds of questions that people have.
We've even had some discussion about, features for the accessibility checker, like on the having a pre-published checklist, adding to the pre-published checklist. Like, have you done these things?
Or even restricting the ability to publish if there are problems present for certain user roles.
Right.
Right. Like, if you have contributors, only an editor can publish something with known problems versus a contributor.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
So I have a question, because it's not every day you get to have Yost and Marika trapped on a call with you for an hour.
With
stroke waffle liqueur.
We did bribe them.
With all of these things happening around language learning models as this new frontier in search is coming out, what role do you two think having a properly built indexable website is going to have on that front? And I'd be curious to hear Amber and Steve's thoughts as well. Like, is it still going to matter as much if all the content is being served through a chat interface?
Well, is the chat interface even accessible? Yeah.
Well, of course, that's the first question, right?
Yeah.
I'd hope it is. I've not checked.
There's a lot going on in the SEO world with all these
new things. I think, honestly, it's too early to draw conclusions, even though I'd really like to. But I'm going to give my off-the-cuff, like, what I'm seeing right now. The problem with all these things is, what are these large language models trained on? And is your website in their data set, or is it not? And do you want it to be? And I think for
do
a
we
lot
want
of brands...
It to be?
Well, so that depends. For a lot of brands, it might make sense to have your data to have to want your data to be part of the ChatGPT training set, because then people can know about you and it can know about you. The other way around, if you make money from your content, you might not actually want it to be in that training set, because then suddenly that training set is giving answers from content that you didn't want in there. Mm-hmm. The problem is the law is not like really subtle in this area. It's very unclear like how this all works. But the first court cases are already starting to come up where publishers are suing creators of large language models, but also other models, for using their materials without paying for it. I think this is going to have a very serious impact on some of these economies. But what the outcome of it will be, I don't really know yet. There's one thing I will say. Google still says that if content is generated by AI, you need to classify it as such. And people misinterpret that, I think. Because I think the main reason why Google wants content that has been generated by an AI classified as such is not because they want to de-rank it, but because they want to prevent themselves from throwing it into their AI model again, because otherwise the AI model is constantly being trained on their own content generated by the AI, and that doesn't necessarily create a better model at all.
Mm-hmm. That's what we end up with. If that goes on and on, then we'll just... Everything.
Yeah, and there's one thing in this that I'm super worried about. Every time I've asked a large language model chat interface, either OpenAI's ChatGPT-4 or Bing's chat or any of the others, to generate content for me, it does something called hallucinating, which is coming up with things that are not true.
But could be true.
So I've asked it to... Yeah, but sound feasible enough
that people could believe it.
Yeah, so in Yoast's case?
So for me, it said that Bing, when I did this to Bing the first time, it said that I was an investor in RankMath, which I'm obviously not. It also said that I'd spoken at MozCon, the big conference organized by Moz every year. I've never spoken there. It's feasible that I might speak there at one point, but I've never spoken there. When I used another model later on to generate a bio or intro for a speaker that was coming on stage at the conference that I was at the time, it said, she holds a bachelor in marketing. And I showed it to her, Lily Ray, a well-known SEO, and she said, well, this is all fun, but I don't have a bachelor in marketing. The thing is that model at that time thinks it's reasonable when you say, hey, write me an intro for a speaker at this conference. Her name is Lily Ray, et cetera. And then the model goes up and looks up some facts about her, but the model is also just generating text. And it's just predicting the next logical word to be there. And if you're announcing someone at a search conference, it's logical to say that someone has a bachelor in marketing. But that doesn't mean it's true. And what goes wrong with all these things is that there will be facts in those pre-generated snippets that we use that we forget to check. Mm-hmm. And then we put them out there. And then suddenly the model gets trained, the models get trained again on that data. And then there is a reference out there for something that's wrong. And that'll happen more often than you want to happen. And that's going to create, RoboCop-like situation.
I mean, I for one am apprehensive of submitting to our AI overlords, but I will.
I tried to train it on Accessibility Checker because I went in the very beginning and I was like, what WordPress plugins are there for accessibility? it didn't say ours, and I was mad. So then I spent a bunch of time trying to teach it, but I haven't circled back to see if it actually works. If someone else goes, will it?
No,
they're not self-learning yet.
And I take it a little bit further too. Like, you know, is the information that it's returning even factual, right? But two, like, what kind of biases are cooked into these too? Yeah. Right?
We wrote about that as well. Mm-hmm. We have new inclusive language checker because it's trained on, well, on all this information that's being old and perhaps a bit traditional. So you'll get content that's in the same way. So you need a readability checker because it doesn't write nice sentences either. And you need an inclusive language checker. And you need a brain in order to fact check.
Yeah.
Because,
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I was going to say about, like, to your point, Yos, about it, like, learning things. Or, you know, taking stuff, making stuff up, and then thinking that it's correct. Like, I see a lot of this sort of, you know, circling back to accessibility and just the accessibility community and what I hear from people with disabilities in the community about their experience and how there's a lot of incorrect information or very harmful information about people with disabilities out there. And so I think there's also a concern that, you know, these kind of AI generating tools could continue that and create more information that it says is true about people with XYZ disability or, you know, using language that isn't inclusive to talk about them or their experience that's not real. And I mean, I think that could be harmful and it could make the typical, typical person who has typical abilities who encounters this think that that's really true of people with disabilities, which is a concern, I think.
Yeah. That's my concern as well. And we've seen that with other AI models. I know, was it Amazon, Yoast, that did AI training on their former applicants or job applicants to predict who they should hire. But they hired a lot of white men in the 80s and 90s, and the AI just became, he just took out the white male candidates because it learned
they matched the people who've been working out there for a long time.
Yeah. So
So it's very much garbage in, garbage out. And one of the things that I fully expect will become law, I hope quickly, is that when you have a large language model, you actually need to explain what's in it. Mm. But because otherwise, if you don't say, hey, this is based on this training set, then what can you really trust that thing to do? I mean, the conclusion at that point is that you can't really trust it to do anything, which doesn't mean that it can't do smart things for you. So I think that ChatGPT is very useful to do simple tasks. It's very much, a friend of mine described it as 100 interns. The steam powered engine was 100 horses. This is very much 100 interns, but you need to check everything that they do.
Yeah.
And so I mean, I recently used, I asked in post status, WordPress community Slack for feedback on like, hey, which news sources do you listen to, which podcasts, which newsletters? And I just copy pasted the entire answer, threw it into ChatGPT and said, okay, I've just asked this, can you make a table out of this for me with these columns, like the URL, the name, and the podcast, newsletter thing? And it returned a perfectly healthy table with all the info in there in a couple of seconds, which would otherwise have cost me like 20 to 30 minutes to compile myself. I think for that sort of work, these things are insanely useful for writing quick descriptions based on a text that you give them. If you say, hey, summarize this text for me, it'll do that. And it'll do that fine. And for stuff like that, it is super useful. Right. But to use it to generate text that you're going to use somewhere and then not very thoroughly check it would be completely unreliable.
Yeah, in the first case, you're providing the data to it, telling it what to do with the data. And the other way, you're asking it for the data back.
Yeah.
So
I will say, go ahead, Steve.
You know, as companies that create software, I mean, I've had a little bit of concern with like how you know, moving forward, we protect our intellectual property, right? Like if we were to start writing something, you know, most of our stuff is open source, right? Yeah. So it's not that big of a deal.
That's a problem anyway.
Right. But like with like right? With Copilot and, you know, GitHub Copilot, right? You know, how do we know it's it's not stealing our code, right?
Yeah, and we our software and maybe even our content is open source, but it doesn't mean that we don't hold copyright and we don't want attribution when they use it. And these models don't do that.
Well, Bing does a little, right?
So does ChatGTP, right, can write code, which is interesting. And that made me wonder, like, does it provide attribution or does it violate GPL? Because technically, you're required to provide attribution if you borrow something.
I think that's the subject matter of some of these lawsuits, not the code specifically, but the failure to provide attribution when it's just wholesale ripping content off of websites that it's scanned or modeled on.
What I will say about the coding thing, I've played around a little bit with that, and it does a good job of using semantic HTML if you ask it to make you something. So if you're not super familiar with accessibility and HTML, maybe you can go ask, you know. I bet it gave you a table that was actually coded as a table and not divs.
Yeah,
and you can even ask it to, if you specify it in the prompt. I think one of the most important things that you have to realize when you're doing this is that you're talking to a computer. Mm-hmm. So the more specific you are in your prompt, the better the output will be geared to what you actually need. So if you ask it to write code and you say, I want accessible output, it will give you accessible output. Mm-hmm.
So there might be some use there. But I will say, you probably still need to check it just like you would with content, especially if it starts using ARIA, because we've talked about this before on this podcast, but one of the best rules of ARIA is not to use ARIA. There's case when it makes sense, mm-hmm. but there's other cases where we've seen, here's a link and someone's put a roll of button on it because it happens to be styled like a button. Yeah.
Just make it a button.
So... yeah.
We never make mistakes.
Don't
like
put
that.
A roll of button on a link. So I think you should still check it, but it might be a worthwhile place to get help with generating like HTML structure for something if you're not super familiar.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely going to make developers more efficient. I mean, it is a super fast way to write code. It has made me 30-40% more efficient, certainly, when I'm writing code. I've described some things that I wanted, and I said, I need a Cloudflare worker that does this, and it just gave me the code. I copied it into a worker, and it worked.
Mm. Wow.
But you're an early adopter, Yoast.
I am, but I think a lot of developers will be, especially when it basically starts doing their job for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. Well, this has been super fun. We're about at time. So I am curious if anyone has any sort of last thoughts about accessibility and SEO. I do want to shout out that Marika and I did a live for WordPress Accessibility Day with some other members of the Yoast team last year. I'll put a link to that in the show notes because we had a really great conversation about more in-depth overlap there. But does anybody else have any last thoughts before we sign off?
I would like to ask a question maybe to kind of wrap it all up, right? So SEO, we talk a lot about SEO ranking, right? About how important it is to maximize the users that are coming to your website, right? So what if SEO ranking was not a factor in accessibility? Should we still put this much effort into it? Should we still do it? And why? Is it the right thing to do?
Yeah, we didn't even touch on the whole point of some people think you should not say that you're doing accessibility for SEO reasons
because it's important, right? Regardless,
because it's important even if it doesn't help your SEO.
I think that was what I'm trying to say at the beginning, that I think it's more important because it has to do with human beings, and you should make a website that everybody can visit. But I also think that Google wants to do that. Yeah, Google can be evil sometimes, but in its heart, Google wants to rank websites that are accessible for everybody. I think accessibility is more important than SEO. It's just true. Sorry, Yoast.
I don't disagree. I think you're right. It is more important if you're not making websites for every customer that you or visitor that you can get with your website. Then why are you making it? So you should always.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, accessibility goes back to close to the inception of the internet. Based on my reading, they started having conversations about accessible content very early on. The other thing that I'll say, just as a counterpoint to that, and I'm going to quote a friend of ours, Anne Meek Beauvillet, for this, and I hope to have her on a future podcast episode as a guest as well, just to talk about selling accessibility to large organizations, because that's something that she does a lot in her work. But basically, to paraphrase her, she just says, I don't care how we get the thing accessible. I don't care if I'm appealing to your sense of greed or your sense of fear or whatever it takes to get this over the line, I am going to achieve an accessible outcome. Mm-hmm. She throws expletives in there, which I'm not going to do. But that's the whole way she operates. And I got to say, I respect it. And it resonated with me when we were talking the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think SEO as being having to do with rankings. It has to do with get more people to your website, and that means all kinds of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is we're not making websites for ourselves.
No.
We're making them for someone else. Even if it's just a personal blog. When I started mine, I made it for my grandma. Like, so my grandma could see pictures of my children. Yeah. Or I made it for my future, my children in the future, so they could look back and read stories about themselves. But if it's a business, that's the thing that I think is always interesting with business owners and talking about that is the website. Yeah, it should appeal to you, but really who it should appeal to is your target demographic or your customers or people who can engage with your business in the way you want them to engage. And those people aren't always people who look or have the exact same abilities that you have.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Is that that's our perfect ending?
That's it.
I think so. Full stop. All right. Well, hey, Yoast and Marika, thank you so much for joining us today. Seriously, it was a great conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. See y'all later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.